Best droid name ever.
Yes, it is. You guys are listening to episode 92 of the Star Wars Report. Dave Filoni's back. And he lost his hat.
Sorry, I decided to close up my bathroom for you there.
I think that's our cue. I think that is our cue.
The flush.
Oh, that was weird.
It's all going in, guys.
Nathan doesn't care at all. He's just waving a bear around.
What is happening, party people? Welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast, what I think is just about the most exhilarating hour of Star Wars podcasting on the old... On this here internets, I'm your host, founder of StarWarsReport.com, Riley Blanton. Thank you so much for tuning in to this particular episode. And we've got a lot to talk about before we get into all that. I'd like to welcome back to the show, as always, my sister, Bethany Blanton.
Rocking to the beat. Excited to be back.
Yes, good to have you with us. And we've got two Star Wars Report alumni. Joining us, as always, is Defender of the Expanded Universe, Mark Herleman.
Yes, I am here with my crazy droid, as
excellent,
always.
Excellent, excellent.
And ready to go.
And making a repeat visit, I think, in the same month, which may be a new record, but I wanted to get him back for our Rebels discussion. It's Nathan Patrick Butler.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome, welcome. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. We are about 2 weeks out from the wedding, so
I know.
It's all building from here.
And you somehow made time for us. We really do appreciate it.
Like a submersible, the pressure just keeps building.
Any Star Wars plans for the wedding?
We've got a special wedding march. When she walks down the aisle, it will start with Here Comes the Bride, cut over into Imperial March, and then back. Something I edited together. We've got a few little bits of Star Wars music here and there, and when we do they call it Unity Sand, I guess, now, instead of Unity Candle, where you can do a thing where you have two different colors of sand and you put them together, mm-hmm. instead of lighting a candle with two different candles. We are going to have the bottom layer beneath mine and hers be a little vial of sand from Tunisia where they filmed the Tatooine stuff that
nice.
I got ages ago when I think it was when I picked up the Force Among Us, that fan documentary on DVD. They had that as my little promo items.
I don't like sand.
Nice.
It's rough, of course. Gets everywhere. I think that's awesome. And you know what? That just made me think of that scene in Attack of the Clones, and it just popped into my head that, you know, it's weird that the topic of not liking sand came up on a planet as beautiful and as fairly sand-free by comparison as Naboo. Instead of Tatooine. And then, of course, in the Clone Wars movie, it kind of came up again. But really, as far as the main Star Wars films go, the sand mention came, of all places, on Naboo.
Maybe it was the fact that that her whole playing hard to get thing was grating against him like sandpaper. And he thought, sandpaper? Sand? Hey! I don't like sand. Did you know that?
Yeah, I guess that might have come. All right, so we're here. This is going to be a one-topic show. We've got we have some news that's been out this week, but I wanted to save some time to really go into depth and into discussion with Star Wars Rebels, and really give our opinions of what all the news that's come so far, and our speculation about what we think we may or may not see. So, I guess what I'd love to do to start off this discussion is actually, Nathan, since you weren't here last week, if you don't mind, I would love for you to get a recap of the news from your perspective, what you learned and what you know, and kind of what your overall initial thoughts were when this announcement was made.
Okay. Well, you know, we had that that message that they gave us where they told us that Clone Wars was done. Clone Wars was not coming back, but it was going to have those bonus content episodes, whatever you want to call them, out there, and kind of couched within that announcement. They had said something about, you know, a new era of Star Wars animation, kind of an untouched era for Star Wars animation, and that was just kind of where it was left. And then we finally get this big announcement saying, hey guys, there'll be a new Star Wars cartoon series coming. It is helmed by Dave Filoni. It's coming in 2014, called Star Wars Rebels. And we get the video on StarWars.com where Dave Filoni talks through some designs, actually going and using ones that he had sort of hinted at a little bit on Facebook. He had a Facebook post where he had shown a sketch of a TIE fighter and said, hey, for the first time I've gotten to draw a professional TIE fighter. And we're all thinking, why? And hoping it had to do with this. So we've got that. We've learned, thanks to the video that they put up, that Joel Aaron is coming back as a CG supervisor, that Killian Plunkett is back as the art director, that it's going to be taking place in that dark time, whatever you want to call it, between episode 3 and episode 4, which hasn't really been touched as much as other eras, until recently at least. And the idea, I believe, is that it's going to have a pilot movie actually airing on television instead of in theaters, a first feature-length animated Star Wars thing since The Great Heep to be just on television. That'll be on Disney Channel, then I believe the regular series jumps to Disney XD.
Yeah,
and they got Simon Kinberg, the executive producer, also writing that first movie pilot, whatever you want to call it.
Did they use the term movie when they announced it? Because that may have been something I missed when they talked about it premiering on the actual Disney Channel before it moves to Disney XD.
Well, they said a 1 hour special. I think of it in terms of movie style because that's pretty much what we got with The Great Heap, and Star Wars doesn't usually get movie-style animated features.
Oh, that's kind of telling, though, if they're calling it a one-hour special. That means that no episodes are going to be an hour long, then. Dang!
Well, I think that's a pretty fair assumption. Although, I would love the one-hour format. I think Clone Wars really suffered in some ways to be stripped down to those 22 minutes, because they either had a tendency to cover hardly any territory, right? And then some of the episodes,
or else they would try to get it to where they would drag on for. They would pull out like a small plot point. It was as if because they only had the 22 minutes, they either had to focus on something really small or try to cram a ton into one small space. And I still think that the best Clone Wars episodes were the arcs.
Definitely,
and that's what they tried to do with season 5. Season 5 was basically just these mini Star Wars movies. They just had to split them up into 4 chunks or whatever it was each time. But I'm kind of torn on the whole 1 hour thing. I mean, I would love to see it 1 hour because I'd like to see something that can have a little more depth to it. But then I think, you know, are we going to be getting like 1 hour of The Lawless and some of those really kick butt Black Sun Darth Maul episodes? Or are we going to get like hour long A Sunny Day in the Void? Because if we're going to get hour long episodes like that, you can keep your hour. Give me something good for an hour. So, I don't know. It seems like, I don't know. I don't know if this would work better as four shorter episodes as one story arc like they did with Clone Wars, or if taking an approach more like, say, a Star Trek The Next Generation thing would work, where you had a lot of these two-part episodes where together they wound up being an hour and a half, but it was only in 2 weeks sitting. I guess it just kind of depends on how they approach storytelling in those 22 minutes, as Bethany was saying.
Yeah.
Well, that's something I think of is The Next Generation, that the hour-long format and how that worked. But even there, think about The Next Generation, how they were kind of like self-contained episodes. You know, like there was very little continuity going on as they slowly worked it in. But then Deep Space Nine was more continuity from beginning to end. You know, I mean, if they did something like that where they actually didn't jump around and pull the Clone Wars season 1, 2 and half of 3, where they're jumping all over the place. If they actually had it planned and went in a chronological order with events building from one episode to the next, where you could go off on a tangent for 4 episodes, you know, and be like, wait, what's going on with this? And then come back to it like 16 episodes later and continue to build off of it. Oh, well, we built off the events of that 1-4 that you saw. We'll think like with Legacy, with the Mandalorian arc. You know, it wasn't the Mandalorian arc when we first got it. It was the Joker Squad. And, you know, you had to find out the background of what was going on with that later. But it paid off big in the end. And that was just a 4-issue story that ran throughout the larger series.
Yeah. And you mentioned chronology, Mark, because with Clone Wars, now that it's over, essentially, with whatever bonus content we'll get, now we can look back on it. And that's something that's really always the case, that it's really hard. There, in many ways, a series that's ongoing is very difficult to criticize, especially with the most passionate core fan base of that series, which are the people who listen to this podcast. And so when we when I talked about Clone Wars, then often it's say, well, we don't know what's coming. But so far, really, what the main one of the main mantras I've heard out of the fan community is that they want these plot threads from the Clone Wars, for instance, Darth Maul. What happens to Darth Maul? That seems to be the most pressing one. You know, the fan
but everybody
really
wants an answer to that. But if the answer is he's going to be a villain in Episode 7, they're all like, I don't want nothing to do with it.
This is true. Well, I'm fairly sure we're not in danger of that.
Well, I mean,
the child, it's
going to
be the child of
regard.
Maul and Ahsoka.
Huh. Yeah, but you never hear anybody go, well, I want these Clone Wars plot lines. I want them in the sequel trilogy. I mean, everybody's like, they got their money banked on Rebels right now. Like, this could happen. That, not so much. This, though, this could happen.
Well, and I think it just has to do a lot with the creative team behind it. I think that since Rebels has the same showrunner, or is the term they're using for Dave now showrunner, or what's the term that they're calling him? I think he's
Ringmaster.
Executive producer is one of the titles they're using for him, but I'm assuming he probably has multiple ones. He's wearing multiple hats.
Rancor.
Unlike in that video.
Rancor, Wrangler, maybe. I don't know. But I guess, and you, so yeah, like you said, Mark, chronology, I think now looking back on it, I think it's a little bit fairer to criticize, or at least criticize is a strong word, but you take a holistic look at the series in retrospect now. I think we can now do that. And I think one of the greatest things that the Clone Wars suffered from was the way the chronology was just so disjointed in those first few seasons. And even when it wasn't disjointed, even for instance in season 5, how just radically vignette-y, if I can make up a word, how you just have these weird vignettes of here's a story about maybe how parts of the rebellion started, and then here's Sunny Day in the Void, and then here's the Ahsoka arc, and then here's the Maul arc, and they're all pretty much entirely unrelated to each other. And so that's one thing I think it really suffered from is just that lack of a linear story. And I think a lot of people would blame George Lucas for that, because he directly inspired every single story arc, and some of them were great, some of them not so much. But I think regardless of the good or bad ones, which ones you did or didn't like, I think it's hard to argue the fact that these storylines were very disjointed and did not relate to each other very well, if at all.
That's the company
also
line.
Go ahead, Nathan.
Well, I was just going with that. That's Mark? The company line. I mean, the aspect of, well, it doesn't have to line up, so we're free to tell good stories. And, you know, from a fan like me and Nathan's perspective, it's like, well, you can also tell good stories and also use what's come before as well.
Well, and I'm not speaking so much on continuity, Mark, as much as just, well, I guess it
episode
is kind
four.
Of continuity, depending on how you think. I don't really think of it in terms
I think that structure damaged what you're talking about. I mean,
sure.
I mean, we don't have to have the whole story of the EU meshing with it. That doesn't have to work. But by taking that approach where you don't worry about it, I think it allows you to trip. And that's what you saw as occasional trips, because one man was playing it really close to his vest and not telling everyone else. And so you had that aspect of, well, what story do we have now? And these guys were all being creative. They were all coming up with ideas and stuff, but they were having little breadcrumbs tossed to them a little bit at a time. So, you know, they'd have some ideas that would work, and then they'd have another story that would give to them later, and they're like, oh man, but we could have done so much more if we'd have known about that.
Well, yeah, and I think that a lot of times when especially EU fans talk about continuity, they talk about, well, we want to use specific characters or scenarios to relate. But I think I don't care about that as much. But in that the same kind of, I guess, philosophy behind the creative process for the Clone Wars actually hurt the Clone Wars, even as just as a self-contained story, just because they didn't relate to each other, you know, to their own material, much less other material. And I kind of feel like moving forward with Rebels, here, I guess here's the point of discussion. I think that there's a lot of potential now that George is not involved to have stories that are a lot more linear.
But that's part of that isn't a storytelling issue, though, the way that they set it up. I mean, in you do have continuity to a degree, different arcs and whatnot that play off of each other in Clone Wars, albeit usually, you know, there's one segment of the arc in one season, the next segment's the next season, like with the Mandalorian stuff, for instance. But part of that with, and this is going to be, I would assume, the same case for Rebels, is that they were kind of the term, I don't want to use the term making it up as they go along, because that seems like there's no planning at all, but they were making their assets as they went along. I mean, you can't do an episode like what we saw in season 5 with many of those back in season 1, because you didn't have the character models for them. It takes time to develop them, money to pay the people, the man hours to do it. You start out with a relatively limited cast of characters and relatively limited abilities within the animation with them, and you grow that over time. By the time you get to season 5, you get all kinds of cool characters in the background doing stuff, but that's because they'd already created them, like Terra Sanube, back with Lightsaber Lost, for instance, and now he can show up in the background of season 5. Unless they do a lot of either repurposing of stuff from the Clone Wars cartoon and they keep the same style, they're probably going to run into the same thing again. It might be something they can use careful planning and say, okay, we're not going to create this background speech because we don't need to right now. We'll wait until there's a major character of that species later, so now we can focus on some cool things for this episode and kind of map out what they need resource-wise a little more ahead of time. But even then, I'm not sure that would save it from the same lack of assets issue that any CGI series is going to have out of the gate.
So you're saying...
Well, that was going to be my question, was does it almost guarantee we're going to have that same styling because of the aspect of how many models, the backgrounds and stuff like that, that you could take and put in any era that are already developed for the Clone Wars that are just there ready to use. I mean, you know, it's funny because in a lot of ways that is the complaint of the EU fan. It's like, you got all this material, use it. Use it, take it, run with it. I think I'd be okay with that. Versus if they were to continue Rebels in the Gendy style. I was never a fan of the Samurai Jack, but I like the styling of the Clone Wars.
I mean, but any CG style, that's the issue. If they don't stick with the same style as Clone Wars, then they've got general character design done, but the CG models are going to have to be made from the ground up, and they're going to wind up in that same bottleneck of style. I would love to see them take something... And as controversial as it is, that Star Wars Volume 2 that just started with the art by Carlos de Anda, that art style is awesome. I love that. That is becoming one of my favorite Star Wars art styles ever in a comic. But something like that is fairly close to Clone Wars style to an extent. At least it's stylized to a degree. You could do something like that, stylize it in Clone Wars style, make it a little darker, and keep using some of the same models. But there's nothing to say that they're necessarily... going to. I mean, they've really upped their game from the Clone Wars movie to season 5, but how much of that, of the secrets and the tricks that work with that type of animation goes out the window when you start stylizing the characters so that, for instance, a bearded character doesn't have a beard that looks like it's made of a block of wood?
There were times, I will be honest, like I felt in the Clone Wars that Obi-Wan needed to just drop the lightsaber and just start headbanging, wham, wham, or rather chin-banging all of his opponents, especially like in those first couple episodes. But yeah, we do know when they talk about the way in the video where Pablo Hidalgo, I just wanted to, it took me a second to remember the name, where Pablo's talking to Dave Filoni, where he's specifically, one of the biggest parts of that whole video is them talking about the style and using the Ralph McQuarrie style of artwork. So I think from a technical perspective, when we're talking about this issue of linear storytelling, I can see where that is a challenge, especially if they're doing a whole new art style, which I think then means that they don't use the assets from the Clone Wars that they already have. If they even can, because I'm not really sure what the legal implications are of using the material that they were contracted to do through Cartoon Network and Turner. I don't know exactly how that would work, but I imagine there's a decent possibility that there might be some sort of conflict of interest to use all these assets gained while doing, you know, work for Cartoon Network and suddenly taking all those assets and transferring them over to Disney. Of course, that might also be something that, you know, Disney legitimately purchased the rights to. I don't know.
I just want a plan. I, you know, like Nathan said, how the last series felt like it was make up as you go. I mean, that's not to say that's how they did it, but you got the feeling that more often than not, that was the case. And then you'd get these great arcs where you could definitely tell there was a start, a middle, an end, all thought out ahead of time. And that's kind of what I want. I like the series that they, you know, we have this vision, and so far into the series, like season 6, we're going to have this major event, and then we're going to go 4 more seasons, and we're going to wrap up around this time. We're having somewhat of an idea of where they're going with it. I don't know. That, I think, would be more exciting than than knowing that, you know, we're going to get these really cool X-Wing and TIE Fighter battles, but they really have no idea what they're going to do with it. They just want to throw some really cool battles at you, and they're going to give you good stories. Yeah, and that's great, but I want an overall, you know, sit down with the high-ups and them have a real good plan for this. I mean, you canceled the Clone Wars at a time where everybody felt you shouldn't. So, you know, I want some real heart, soul, and thought time put into this.
Yeah, and they need to really, and on some degree, I can see where you're coming from, Nathan, but I really do think that they can do a much better job of that linear storytelling, even with a technical...
And you can have both, too. I mean, you can have the sort of monster of the week.
This is like, I keep talking, because now we lost
I know. You can have the sort of monster of the week storytelling style, but you can have simultaneously along with it an overarching story of the type, per se, Battlestar Galactica, where you have this long-running storyline. Supernatural is a show that's done both quite successfully. It's on its 8th season. It's been renewed for a 9th season. And
it really, it's catching up with Smallville.
I know, exactly. But when you have... when you have Supernatural, which is a pretty successful show, and that has employed both, like the first season or two were more Monster of the Week style, but after that, I mean, there were story arcs that lasted several seasons long, and specifically two that I can think of, one that spanned 3 or 4 seasons, and another that spanned 2 seasons, and so it's really interesting to see, because you know they basically took the show to where the world was ending.
Yeah.
Then they saved the world. Okay. Where do you go from there? But Supernatural did it successfully. I mean, it had a rough start back when they realized, oh, this series got renewed. And now what do we do?
And the main characters died. Wait, we got renewed for another season?
And they brought them back to life, literally, actually, with one of them.
Wow.
Well, what character I'm worried died. About is, yeah. Let's say they do have a plan. Let's say they do set up something where... they have a self-contained arc of stories they want to tell, like what J. Michael Straczynski used to talk about with Babylon 5, a 5-year story arc. Because when that show got canceled early, they were able to cram it in and make it 4 seasons. But then once the arc of what they wanted to tell was done, they kind of did the same thing. And what you got was kind of crappy. They said, oh, we just got picked up by TNT. We're getting some telemovies, and they're going to put it out in widescreen. And, oh, they just greenlit us for another season, a 5th season? Yeah, but we already crammed season 5 into the end of season 4. What are we going to do now? And we got a season 5 that was kind of meh compared to everything else.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, and... Yeah, we're having a couple internet problems, but we'll resolve those in just a moment. But yeah, Mark, are you with us by any chance? Okay, so Mark's not with us, but I will say this about the idea of linear storytelling. I think Battlestar Galactica did it well. I've not seen Supernatural, but I definitely want to see that. So what I'm going to do is pause my recorder for just a moment, and we'll see if we can get Mark back with us. So hang on just a second, guys. All right, and the recorder's back on, and we are back. We have Mark. We do not have video anymore. Technical stuff, it seems to always plague you as a podcaster, but in some ways, I think as technology progresses, I might actually be sad when less technical difficulties occur, because it's kind of become the staple of somewhere in the middle of the podcast. At some point, audio tends to crash. So I'm going to have to get you guys to help me out. Where were we? We were talking about...
Continuity and should they have a plan ahead of time so they don't wind up like Babylon 5 and Supernatural.
Yeah, and I think that's a very, very good point. And when I was talking about the idea of linear storytelling, which I think is not valued enough when they were producing the Clone Wars. Now they have a lot of the same creative team on board, but I think the absence of George Lucas, I really do believe that there's a much stronger chance of more linear storytelling. You guys, but you know, speaking of, I guess there's some things I was reading, and I put out a question on our Facebook page, and some folks were bringing up the possibility of Force Unleashed canon and other things. What kind of stories do you guys want to see?
Anything that doesn't clash with, ideally, I would hate to see it clash with The Force Unleashed. Technically Dark Times, even though I despise it. Dark Lord, Rise of Darth Vader. I mean, there are stories being told in here, but it's not quite as bad as what happened the first time around. Because with Clone Wars, it was no, I'm not going to make anything else. You go ahead and you go play. You create the Clone Wars. Now that I'm making the movies, you can make it. My story's Anakin. And then he's like, never mind. Just kidding. Psych. And now we're going to have the Clone Wars series kind of trample over it. Now they've sort of said that interim between the films, it's now fair game. We got a handful of novels, handful of comics. That's actually when the old droids cartoon took place, was within that gap. We've got the Force Unleashed stuff. So, I don't know. What I probably would like to see the most, aside from just I hope it doesn't trample over everything, unless they're going to make this Clone Wars and the films a separate continuity, which I think is probably the best solution, I would kind of like to see, if they're not going to make that live action series, I want to see some of those storylines folded into this.
Yes.
I want to be able to see those stories and see that they've, these ideas they've been working on for years, see the light of day and connect. And if they're going to make Star Wars 1313, that was supposed to kind of have a similar feel to that, to the live action series, weave that in too. Make this a series that is, it knows what it is. It's not what Clone Wars was. It doesn't think it's a kid's show one week and then start talking about suicide and acting all adult the next week. Give us a series that is aimed at one specific audience, hopefully a more mature audience, teen or over, and just go with it. But know what you are when you do it.
Well, and there's the rub. Is Disney XD as a channel that I think of, I don't really think of it as adult or even really teen programming. Would you say Cartoon Network or Disney XD skews younger as far as audience goes?
Probably Disney XD, but they had Tron.
That's true.
And Tron had some heavier elements to it. Honestly, when you ask about thinking about Disney XD for cartoons, my answer would be I don't think of Disney XD. Period.
Well, Transformers
outside of Tron.
Prime. That was also Disney XD.
No, first that's Hub, isn't it?
Oh, is it Hub?
That's
See,
Hub.
I don't have internet anymore, so I'm always seeing everything off of Netflix, so I don't even remember. But a lot of those shows on the that I remember seeing, although now I can't use that one because there was a character that died right away, but I remember them being a little more edgier than, you know, Phineas and Ferb.
That makes sense.
Well plus you get the fact that I mean, one thing that was in Cartoon Network's favor was they had the whole Adult Swim thing, and they never made Clone Wars part of that. But they kind of recognize the idea that there's a dividing line in the evening where you can go from sort of the younger fare to edgier, more adult stuff. Disney XD doesn't seem to have that type of mindset. But then again, nothing says that Star Wars to be dark has to no longer be family friendly. I mean, Revenge of the Sith, Attack of the Clones, those were dark stories. I mean,
there are some dark episodes of the Clone Wars, even.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. What as far
I'm gonna say what's blasphemy here, but I truly wish
it
wasn't set in 2014. Push it behind episode 7. Give them an opportunity to break out of the canon. Because I think by putting it in 2014, you're pretty much guaranteeing that nothing is gonna change. They're just gonna continue to try to make things work with the old and the new, and then the new stuff's gonna come out, it's not gonna work, and they're gonna go, oh well, we're just gonna go a slight different direction, but we're gonna still pretend that it's all lining up again. And I would rather them put it behind 2015, wait till episode 7 comes out, tie it to that way. Then the references that are being made are obvious, they're right there in your face. I don't know. For once, I'm actually wishing they'd push the project back.
I can sympathize with you.
Only a few months, though.
I mean, I can sympathize with you, Mark, and especially thinking about, it seems like fall 2014 is a very short, in the same way that 2015 seems like a very short time to knock out a new Star Wars film.
Don't worry, you can always make quality movies in very little time. Didn't you know? Oh, wait.
Not always. John Carter, anybody. all right. Sorry, was that out loud?
I like John Carter.
I've actually not seen it. It's just kind of the punching bag of Disney films.
Yeah. Like
if you need a Disney film to poke fun of, John Carter is what you need to go. It's the Jimmy Carter. It's the last time we had to make up real world of references. So if you need a punching bag
it's
representing.
The tag, Binks.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, Margaret, what I'm hearing you saying is that by doing it this soon, you kind of see that as a more of the same and sometimes a bad way. And
yeah, well, I mean, it could be a good thing in the aspect of Lucas is stepped out in that model of, well, it came from Lucas, so this is canon, and everything else isn't quite canon, so we can shift it. I always like to avoid that. But the thing I'm excited the most for is the X-Wings and the TIE Fighters. I mean, that has been the one thing I've been missing from the prequel trilogy. They brought in the Z-95s in the Clone Wars. I love that. You know, they just kind of remind me of the old Tomcats and stuff like that, you know, the classic air fighters. But if we're going to go with Jedi, because they do talk about the last of the Jedi, I would love to see Kukrux show up. Just because, you know, hey, he didn't make it into this last Clone Wars, but he was in the Clone Wars before that. So I'd love to see him there in some form or fashion, even if he's hiding. I know you're like, no, I don't want to see him.
No, I want that. For the love of God. No, I think you bring up the good point there that if this was something that was released specifically to tie into Episode 7, if Episode 7 is going to dash aside continuity for after Return of the Jedi, then yeah, it makes sense for that to be.
Ah. Hmm. Come on, Nathan. Let's see if he jumps back. All right, well, let me pause it real quick.
Okay.
All right, Nathan, we lost you for a second, and you're in the middle of your point. Sorry, go ahead and continue.
What I've got to wonder is, you know, there's so many times when Dave Filoni would talk about his respect for the expanded universe and wanting to draw from the expanded universe and such. And there were times where you would hear him talking about something and it'd be, well, we brought in this element from the expanded universe, but Lucas wanted to do it this different way. So my question is, you know, what was keeping it from being closer tied to the EU? Was it Lucas or was it Filoni? Was it Filoni? And it was just that Lucas was the convenient excuse. Now's the time where he gets a chance to put his money where his mouth is and actually show if this is meant to kind of fit in with everything, if they're not just going to push it off into its own continuity and all. It's his chance to show that actual respect that he talked up so much, but that he wasn't able to necessarily fully act on the first time around.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of ambiguity there as far as who's... Really, it's hard to tell where some of those final words came from, because verbally it was always from George Lucas, and then I heard people who were not fans of Lucas all often saying, you know, all the worst Clone Wars plots were Lucas's faults, and all the good ones were, of course, the ones that the writers and Filoni came up with. Of course, I don't really think that's true at all, and I think that's kind of a petty cop-out that people who really dislike George Lucas
it's an overly simplistic way to view it, even if it is partially... true.
I do really, seeing the behind the scenes, you do see George sitting at the table talking about these stories that he wants to tell, and when they're ready to tell those stories, then they hand them off to the writers and the episodic directors and stuff. So I think a lot of the great elements do come from that core of Lucas, and if anything, sometimes execution could be blamed on the creative team and not just the brain behind it, which is Lucas. When it comes to Star Wars Rebels, you know, as far as expanded universe stuff goes, you're right. It's time to see what changes, because I think the first season of Star Wars Rebels will tell us a whole lot of what a Lucas-less Star Wars, by the way, that's a trademark Star Wars report, Lucas-less, Lucas-less.
A Lucas-less world.
Sans Lucai.
That's what it will look
Nathan
like.
Nathan pointed out something, though, that made me stop and think. I mean, they could, in theory... slip this in and make it still work with everything that came up to Episode 6. And it would work with the EU.
Please no.
And,
sorry, go
and
ahead.
Then they could... Well, hold on. They could then still destroy continuity after Episode 6 with Episode 7. And you could have it work in both realms, just like you're doing with the Clone Wars and stuff now, because really they're going between Episode 3 and Episode 4. I mean, they're not going between 3 and 7. I mean, there's... I mean, it's still an area that we have kind of mapped out, but they could, in theory, make it work with both universes if there comes a bridging at a later point.
And then they could do that whole time travel thing, and you can make it be like a two-part thing where a character flies off in that special Vulcan ship at the end of Episode 7 and is chased back in time by Nero, right? But then winds up in Rebels, and that explains the whole new timeline, man.
What?
I can just see it now. There'll be a whole new chapter that they'll give us an ebook for the Force Heretic series where Jason Solo and Luke are looking for Zenoma Sakaat and they find the multiple galaxy area and bloop, there's a new red ship all of a sudden. I've got an urgent warning.
Nathan, have you seen the most recent Star Trek yet by any chance?
I have not.
Okay.
Though
I was about to...
I'm going to see it soon. I'm trying to put aside my whitewash concerns. I'm not understanding how a change... I don't know
how
to change someone's race is all I'm saying.
Yeah, well...
Then again, it happened... Apparently, it happened with Sulu, so...
Well,
it's out there.
Well, it's a great movie, but we'll be talking about it some after the credits roll in a kind of bonus segment. There's a great, great movie, but I have a couple things that I wanted to point out that are kind of nitpicky. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a kind of a spoiler zone of sorts after the credits roll. But okay, back to the subject at hand. When it comes to, I could see that, Mark, as you, I'm going to revisit what you said a few minutes ago, and that is, when it comes to the way that they're doing Star Wars Rebels, doing it literally a year and a half from this podcast as it's being recorded means that you kind of get that sense that things aren't going to be that different, and I could kind of definitely see that. What I want to see is not, I want to see an attitude of this freedom from previous continuity that the expanded universe has in a way that the Clone Wars, even as much as the Clone Wars kind of treaded awfully heavily over previous continuity, I still think that it was more beholden to it than it should have been, because the end result is they are somehow, God love them, fitting in all of this continuity and still technically making it work together. So I'm just afraid, nay, paranoid, that that's the approach that they'll have not only with Rebels, but also Star Wars Episode 7. And I really just, that I don't like that. I want them to break free of the previous continuity and just make it separate.
It scares me, because what you're describing, if they were to try to shoehorn it all in, and I do not see how they would do that with Episode 7. If they're not going with previously existing stories, unless it just randomly happens to wind up fitting, I don't see them doing it. But let's say they tried to. It's an exponentially larger version of, what was it? Prophets of the Dark Side meets Courtship of Princess Leia.
Okay.
Here's Timothy Zahn, you see, Timothy Zahn had Han and Leia married. So we're going to have them get married in the last book of the Trioculus books. No. See, we're going to have them get married in the Courtship of Princess Leia. Oh, we're going to put them both out. And then there's the whole, excuse me. And there's all these hackneyed, screwed up ways of trying to explain away. See, there's supposed to be these three other books and they were going to interrupt the wedding. Or, see, they realized that it was too soon and they separated, but then they got back in love later and all that crap. You know, don't try to shoehorn it.
It's like, Han stood her up. He was so worried about his own butt in the Millennium Falcon, he left her standing right there in the middle of the temple. And that's why it took so many years to get her to even think about it again. She was so mad.
Exactly.
You
talk about Clone Wars as they're able to make it fit. Not really. I mean, they're trying to make it fit. But we have no evidence whatsoever yet that it's all actually going to fit. All we've got now is a definitive order of episodes and the fact that Lilan Chi is working on trying to figure out how to splice this together. I would be happy if they had just separated it out. The problem, of course, with that now is that, and this is what I think Mark's afraid of, if they were to try to integrate Rebels before Episode 7, but then decided to separate things out after Episode 7, is that while the Clone Wars in itself is almost self-contained relative to the EU, it barely even has anything to do with its own comics or its own novels for the Clone Wars. Those spinoffs just fell completely flat. But now they've worked it into the Essential Atlas, the Essential Guide to Warfare. Now there are different stories that are slowly working bits and pieces of that in, so that even if they did remove the Clone Wars cartoon series and Rebels or whatever to be just with the films and leave the rest as it was, now there are these elements into it that they would have to basically come in and say, oh, that doesn't exist. Oh, that reference to Ahsoka Tano in the Essential Guide to Warfare. The whole Essential Guide to Warfare, that's okay, but Ahsoka, she's out. Those battles from the Clone Wars, they're out. There is no clean dividing line anymore. Doesn't
Apocalypse.
Mean it works together. It just means it's kind of cross-pollinated, it's cross-polluted, so to speak, until they find a way to sift it out. Right, it's at the water treatment plant, and right now it's still got it's at the water treatment plant, there you go, and right now it's still got the turds floating in it because it hasn't gone through the screens yet.
You do kind of get that sense. I guess in summary, I do think that the series would greatly benefit from them just finally calling it and saying, all right, it's separate. Because you have things like the rise of the Stormtroopers, the end of the clones, you know.
Yeah.
You have, I want to...
I mean, there really is a lot left in areas of Star Wars to be explored. And then there are some areas that are just so chock full of stories. Yeah. You know, the Nathan thought of, when on earth did the main characters even have a time for a bathroom break?
Yes.
Well, I want to address that because, okay, yeah, the big three, their story in certain time frames is just so mapped up they can't even sneeze without it being already mapped. But that's not to say that Coran Horn's story at that time frame hasn't been mapped out, or Quinlan Vos, who we don't know what's going on with him. There are plenty of other characters out there. And that was one of the things that I was so excited about when Lucas first started talking about the prequel trilogy and then doing the Clone Wars, was he was talking about, we're going to deal with these new characters, we're going to have all these new things, and what do we get? We got Anakin and Obi-Wan, Anakin and Obi-Wan, Anakin and Obi-Wan, Anakin, Obi-Wan, Padme, Anakin, Obi-Wan, Padme, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka. It's like, come on, I'm so sick of Anakin right now.
I don't like
that. No, I mean, that's kind of the same thing, though. It's the, what I worry about with any new Star Wars series, from a continuity standpoint, and granted, I enjoy the Clone Wars. I can enjoy it for what it is. I really love Season 5. The things look great on Blu-ray. It's part of my Star Wars now, even though I'm not sure that it's going to find a way to work. But it's the hey, look, guys, see, remember? We know it's Star Wars 2 kind of crap that they do. Like, is that Greedo? Yes, we said Greedo. And they expect everybody to go, yes, it's Greedo. Greedo's going to be on the show. And instead it turns into, wait, that's supposed to be Greedo the Elder. There's Greedo the Younger. You're going to destroy these stories. What the hell are you doing? There's a big disconnect between what they think we want to see and what we want to see. And what did they do with Greedo? Brought him in for one episode when he could have been any other goon. Dashed away a couple short stories, a comic strip, and a few other things. Basically rewriting Greedo's backstory. Goodbye, Greedo the Elder. Might as well add in that deleted scene back into The Phantom Menace. Why? Because Lucas said, I want to have him be a Rodian. I think it'd be cool if it was Greedo. So that he could be in there for a few scenes, barely say anything, and be like a little mini nuke into his own continuity for no reason. I mean, that's like me calling off my wedding because, I'm sorry, honey, when I sneezed, you did not say bless you. What?
Well, I mean, that
I would definitely count, agree with Jody. It doesn't count.
If I cared about Greedo the Elder, I might actually agree with you.
You're saying something in German?
But okay. All right, I think that's going to bring most of this discussion to a close. I do want to bring a little bit of extra discussion after the credits roll in just a moment here. And we've also got some voicemail from the listeners that we'll jump to after the credits. And then stick around, folks, because I am going to, let's see. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. I am going to have to put you guys on hold for just a moment and call Steve Glosson, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. We'll see if this works. This is a big challenge. So, all right, I'll be with you guys in just a minute. All right, so what I'm going to do is call Steve Glosson's mobile. There we go. And if it works, we'll be good. And be sure, guys, to stick around. We'll also have a Star Trek discussion afterwards. All right, come on, Steve Glosson.
Wampa Control, we take the risk so you don't have to.
Steve, you got your particular pitch. This is your chance. This is the big wide audience that you have through the Star Wars Report. Your pitch for a storyline in Star Wars Rebels, and it begins right now.
The storyline for Star Wars Rebels is as follows. You gotta have Rebels. You gotta have the Rebellion growing. You gotta have that happening. I think there needs to be whispers of the Death Star, and I think you need to see failed attempts by the Rebels constantly to try to find out what's going on with this Death Star project that's going on in the galaxy, to find out what it's all about. Somewhere in there, I would love to see an Obi-Wan Vader face-off, maybe in a season finale. That way we can understand deeper Obi-Wan once thought as you did, meaning there's still good in him. And we got storylines from the Clone Wars that need to be cleared up. Darth Maul, Boba Fett, Cad Bane, Hondo Inaka, Ahsoka Tana. All these people versus Darth Vader. You've got me. I'm hooked.
Nice. Excellent. And so that we've got 10 seconds left, And I want to tell everybody again, it's geekoutonline.com and geekoutpodcast.com is where you want to find them. Here we go, folks. That's it for Steve Star Wars Minute. We'll see if we can get the other folks on.
Double kill. Sudden death. Snipers.
All right, there you go. Steve Star Wars Minute. It worked.
Woo.
It worked, guys. All right, that does it for this particular episode of the Star Wars Report Podcast. That's it, everybody. Again, stick around. Afterwards, we got some listener voicemail that I want to play and respond to, and then also our post-credits Star Trek Into Darkness special. Don't worry, Nathan. We'll give you a warning so you can drop out before we spoil it all, because I know you're going to go see it soon. All right, so if you guys want to stay in touch with us, the number one best way to do that is to subscribe. That's what I'm trying to say. Subscribe to this here podcast. If you're within the sound of my voice, the number one thing I want you to do is go to iTunes and subscribe to your show, or use your favorite podcatcher of choice. You've got Beyond Pod for Android. You've got all kinds of stuff. You've got the Zune Marketplace. We're all everywhere. So just search for Star Wars Report, subscribe, and we'd really appreciate it if you would leave a rating or review. I think I've got my music up awfully loud. There we go. That's better. So yeah, leave us rating review. That really helps us stay more visible within the fan community. You can share the Star Wars Report with more folks and bring more folks into our community. The number two thing I want you to do is go to StarWarsReport.com/mailing list. And that's the way you can get on our super, super duper awesome, VIP exclusive mailing list. Like, it's like, you think I'm doing hyperbole? You don't know what's on the mailing list. You gotta subscribe and find out. That sounds awfully threatening. I wonder if I'm violating some sort of, I don't know, law there. All right. And that's another fantastic way. And then basically what you'll get on the mailing list is just these occasional updates. I usually do it once or twice a month with special bonus content that we put up there, bonus recordings, bonus interviews. It's all there, StarWarsReport.com/mailing list. And I send out a link to our actually custom landing page that has all of that bonus content there, which is a great way to do that. All right, follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. It's /StarWarsReport, respectively. And, some folks did just most recently, give us a call on our voicemail feedback line. That's 858-859-0SWR. Again, that's 858-859-0SWR. And email us, StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Nathan Butler and Mark Hurlman can be heard discussing all things Expanded Universe in Star Wars Beyond the Films, another fine program. I almost said podcast, but I kind of like the term program. Fine programming, courtesy of Star Wars Report. .com. And finally our Pringles giveaways, courtesy of the great Pringles company, continue over at StarWarsReport.com/Pringles. We're giving away some cool headphones this week. We gave away a cool Ewok plushie last week, and more coming next week. I update every new page each week, and that same URL, all you have to do is go to StarWarsReport.com/Pringles. Huh, I got it all in. That does it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. For Mark, for Nathan, for Bethany, thank you for listening. And remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. Bum, 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 bum. All right, Google Voice. Let's see if this works. All right, here we go. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, it would help if I played the correct
feelings and good one. Questions.
All right, so we got a voicemail from Zach here, I believe.
Hey, Riley, Bethany, Mark, and everybody else over at the Star Wars Report. This is Zach, and I'm here to just give you some of general thoughts, feelings, and questions. I want to tackle first the whole Rebels thing, and I absolutely love this. They're doing another show, and I loved it you know, they're bringing in Simon Kinberg.
Like, I hate and you, Dad.
The guy from Gargoyles. I can't think of his name at this point, but it's really
hey.
Awesome. So
all right, let's see if we can keep it where I'm going to pause the voicemail. Sorry, guys, I thought you were in the call, and I realized you weren't. I just went through the whole credits and everything. But
what
we're,
the hell?
We are in the post.
What was that crap, man?
Okay, so episode's over.
We're just having our own conversation.
We're having our little conversation. We're deciding what to call Latara in Ewok Season 2. And then,
well, we are in the post-show, so the recorder, the recorder is still going. No cussing or anything, but I'm playing voicemail from Zach, so I'm going to resume that and see if it's still working, and then we'll jump into our Star Trek discussion. Here we go.
Much of the same kind of general style as we did back in the Clone Wars, which makes me happy, and I hope that maybe some things from the Clone Wars can get wrapped up. Like, I mean, for the most part, at the end of Season 5, I called in and I told you if this is the end, it's a very satisfying end to me. I mean, the only big major thing that's dangling the question to me is the whole Darth Maul thing. You know, what did Palpatine do to Maul after the end of that episode? And that's, I think, with Dave Filoni involved, we have some chances to get answers to those kind of questions. Really, I mean, there may be something like Rex. What happens to Rex? Did he become a stormtrooper, or did he desert like everybody else was saying he would? But yeah, those are my general thoughts on Star Wars Rebels. And I want to go back to a comment that I think it was Riley said.
Uh-oh.
Maybe on their, I don't think it was their last episode or, you know, the episode before that, but where he's talking with Steve Glosson and he's talking about how we need to reboot the EU, which I totally agree with that. You know, like, I mean, if I've got to sacrifice the post Return of the Jedi EU to get new movies, then I think that's a sacrifice I'm willing to take. I don't need things to be one continuity, and I know Nathan's out there screaming somewhere, but that's okay. I don't need things to be one whole continuity, and, you know, Star Wars is a visual thing to me. It's never going to work as well as it does. It's never going to work in the book as well as it does on film. I mean, when I'm reading about the battles in the books, I can't get into it like I can if I'm watching, you know, Episode 6 or, you know, the
Amen.
Or A New Hope.
Amen,
you know,
brother.
It's, just, it's really hard to get some of those.
All right, and this is where, unfortunately, the voicemail had
it's
some
really
malfunction because, and it broke up right there towards the end, and I think there's like a 3-minute limit, and that's why, unfortunately. But Zach, we really do appreciate your voicemail. Some mm-hmm. great points that I want to touch on. Mark, I know you've got one or two comments really quick, although considering he's here to defend himself, I think Nathan had an interesting interesting comment in the chat while we were listening to that.
Oh no, I have no problem with the idea of us having separate continuities. It's just a question of how they present it. I've said, I would much rather have the Clone Wars and Rebels and the new films and the old films as one continuity and just say that the EU as it was stopped at a certain point and that's a continuity to itself. Although the issue of, as much as I love seeing Star Wars on film and I would sacrifice most of the EU if it meant a series of really good Star Wars films to carry on the film legacy as well, I'm not sure about the idea that it just can't be executed as well as on film in print somehow. I mean, I'm pretty sure that most Star Wars fans who have read the Thrawn trilogy, for instance, would look at that and say that was better than, say, The Phantom Menace. And there's plenty of people, myself included, who would argue that the Revenge of the Sith novel, storytelling-wise, was significantly better than the Revenge of the Sith film. Although, to me, the two it created one bigger experience, the Stover effect, that really made me made that movie my favorite out of the six because of the depth that was added by the book.
I mean, in Zach's defense, I see exactly what he's saying. When we talk about that visual medium, I do really think that that's where Star Wars is in its best medium. And
you're
right,
because
when you
that's also it's kind of a that's what people often think of when they think Star Wars, because that was how most people were first introduced to Star Wars. And it's kind of the nostalgia effect of, you know, well, my first Star Wars movie was thus and such, and I remember watching it, and we had popcorn, and I was five, or something like that.
Well, and if you ask me about, you know, the overall book versus the Phantom Menace, there's a comparison to be made there. But if you ask me whether, you know, a specific space battle in any of the Thrawn trilogy versus the battle over Naboo, I would have probably told you I enjoyed the battle over Naboo in terms of the starfighters better. So in terms of that visual medium, and the space battles and stuff, I can definitely see where Zach's coming from. But also, Nathan, at its core, as important as the visuals are to Star Wars, and where that I truly do believe it's in its native element, the story is still the most important thing. You mentioned the post-Return of the Jedi era EU, and I think there is a likelihood that it'll be separate. As Nathan said, can we just introduce some charged terminology and say it'll be separate but equal, right? So there we go. For Star Wars continuity. And of course, and the first
It doesn't
thing
even need to be separate but equal. Just make it, pull a pre-Brown versus Board of Education on this sucker. Segregate it, but leave the old EU as something that is lesser as long as it's still there. I mean, to make the historical analogy, when it comes to Star Wars, we know that they're not going to treat the EU on par with new films. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
We are in a situation where we are pre-1954 United States. We've got the segregation already going on, and we've got one group treated as lesser than others. However, that doesn't mean we've got to go all Nazi and start wiping out the people who are being segregated from everyone else. That's
exactly
a different approach.
Exactly.
You like
not
the EU? Up with your head.
It's not.
No.
By the way, I just want to put this
in Bibles. They're burning Heir to the Empire. They're burning Dark Empire. They're burning Fate of the Jedi. Although, you know, maybe
don't
that's
by the way,
star
I just want to take this moment to just point out the fact that the Star Wars Report podcast is the only Star Wars podcast that you'll be listening to on the internet where we make comparisons and parallels between mid-20th century America and racial tensions and laws that were made and Star Wars. That's an exclusive either. You're welcome, by the way. That's on the Star Wars Report podcast. All right, that does it.
Now,
Riley,
before we go, I got to put on my conspiracy theorist hat here.
All right.
Okay. Again, getting back to these open plot holes that everyone wants sewn up and tied together all nice and pretty, and mm-hmm. we want this resolution. George Lucas mm-hmm. had a vision, right? I mean, that's what we're all here for George's vision. Gotta love this man. And he had plans. He plans to sell Star Wars to Disney. Okay. But not until he set the stage for his new films. The villain is going to be Darth Maul. But Darth Maul, where did he come from? Well, he had a plan to bring him back in the Clone Wars. But they weren't going to tell you what happened to him from there. So when he shows up, we have an idea. What's Luke going to be doing? Well, Luke's going to be trying to bring Ahsoka Tano back into the Order because he found out, hey, this used to be my dad's Padawan, but my dad lost her, so I got to do the right thing, and I've got to redeem her, and she disappeared because Lucas planted those seeds too. It's all right there for us. It's coming. We know who the hero and the villains are. We just don't want to accept it.
And the Force isn't caused by midichlorians. It's caused by lens flares.
I think that's our cue. That's our cue. That's our cue. Jumping into the old Star
Trek
discussion.
That is the title.
Well, oh, yeah. So I need, all right. The second you said that, all right. Lens flares. All right. Lens flares. All right. Title.
The force is caused by lens flares.
Yes.
The force is shining in you.
All right. Awesome. Nathan, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to jump into spoiler territory for Star Trek. So. I assume you do not want to be spoiled, correct?
I've been spoiled quite a bit for it.
Really?
But yeah, I'll go ahead and bow out, gentlemen.
That's unfortunate. All right, okay. Well, thanks for coming on. As always, Nathan, we'll be in touch, man, and we'll jump
see
into Star
later,
Trek
and
territory. Oh, and we have stuff to talk about.
Yes, we do.
All right, well.
Rubbing
just,
his hands.
I'll keep Skype up.
Sure.
So.
All right, cool.
I'll keep Skype up, I'll just call, add me back in whenever
people on the podcast are really mad at me right now. All right, yeah, we'll talk soon. Cool. I'll have to wait, and I don't have control of the call either, so
I got
right,
you.
See you soon.
Wait, I got a feeling that if I end call,
yeah, you'll have to, and then I'll call Mark back. All right.
Okay.
So going for Mark. All right, there he goes. Where's Mr. Hurley Man? Contact.
Do we have any hold music?
Go. You're the hold music. And go. The cantina theme. Okay, I was gonna even give you a helping hand and just say cantina always works well. Cantina theme.
No, one can't sing that.
No, you have to do it as a boodle deedle. A boop boop
boop boodle doo da da boodle doo. You boodle deedle that well. I don't.
Da 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 da.
See, and Nathan is the reason why I backed away from every trailer and spoiler and everything.
Good.
Right before the movie
good
came out.
Good choice,
like,
sir.
He's like, if what I'm reading is happening, I am not happy. I'm like, uh-oh, get out of this conversation now.
Yeah. All right, so we're here to talk about the Star Trek film, but we all loved it.
Star Trek Into Darkness.
We all loved it. You know, certainly the best Star Trek. Well, I mean, it's right up there. It's hard to beat the first one, but I think it's right up there or above the first
one. I loved
this
film.
New series.
I enjoyed it so much.
I've seen the original Star Trek film, parts of The Wrath of Khan, parts of some of the other originals, but not other than that. I mean, really nothing in the original Star Trek series. But I love Star Trek, love the new series, but...
And so, like, do we have to get right to the butt?
But that's really the only thing I want to take time, because I just, as much as we could talk about how we loved this part or that part of the movie, the movie's been in theaters for about 2 weeks now, and one of the biggest things, so what I want to talk is the lighthearted and the friendly topic of misogyny in American filmmaking today. And so this is not...
Oh, goodness.
This is not... This is just something that I got the itching to discuss.
Promise me we can talk about Spock, like, just a little at some point.
Not really.
Aww.
Although that does kind of... That's part of the plot. So as I watched the film, I was really enjoying it, but I couldn't help it. There are certain moments in it that really took me out of it. And you've got... there's a great... The Mary Sue has a great article that I linked to in the show notes. And I'm going to pull that up right now. But it's basically... There was controversy in this one scene of the film, and partway through the scene of the film, actress Alice Eve, who's playing Dr.
Carol Marcus.
Carol Marcus, although we didn't know she was Marcus until later, but I was like, her last name's Marcus!
You can't even remember the poor girl's name, Riley.
You cannot remember the lady that gave birth to Kirk's son in the original universe?
Well, I hadn't remembered that.
No, I cannot. I will unabashedly admit, no, I cannot. Alice, there was a scene where it was basically gratuitously and unnecessarily. There's a scene where Kirk is like, hey, man, and she's like, turn around. And, of course, he does, and predictably she takes off her clothes. Basically, that's the gist of it. It's just a scene with her and Adam completely
unnecessary. He turned around for like a second.
So here, yeah. He did technically
See,
turn
you
around.
You say completely unnecessary, and I would disagree. As
okay,
a long time
Mark,
Star
I will
Trek
let you disagree. I will let
and,
you.
And son of a fanatic
Mark,
of
will,
Star
I,
Trek.
I will let you disagree in just a moment. But I'm just. But I want to kind of set the overall scene. So basically, here's the sequence of event that happens.
Aren't I supposed to be the one who gets upset about this?
He's like the only one who's not worked up about this. So, but this scene kind of bothered me. It's not terrible, and it's not the end of the world or anything like that. But there are certainly films far worse about the way they portray women. Let's go to the James Bond films of the 60s and 70s. They were way worse about it than this. But this was just, it's a remnant.
And that's just naming them.
This is the remnant of an old Hollywood that thinks this is okay. And guess what? Culturally, we are now moving to a position where it's not. And this is a good thing, because this scene did cause a kerfuffle, a hullabaloo, a scene of sorts on the old interwebs, especially
an internet reaction.
Yes, especially on sites like the Mary Sue, and because so here's where it gets worse. This is where two things very interesting happen. Damon Lindelof is the writer of Star Wars of Star. That's a
we are talking
slip
about
there.
Star Trek.
He
now.
May eventually be a writer on a Star Wars movie, but he's not currently Star Trek writer. Star Trek, the director of Star Trek. J.J. Abrams. And here's two very different reactions. As this kind of flood storm happens from some main geek articles start highlighting and saying, you know what, this is pretty bad, the way this scene is done. And so Damon Lindelof went to Twitter and actually on Twitter apologized for it. And I don't know if I have, let me see if I have it. The recent controversy. Let me open another article. I'm kind of speaking while I'm talking here.
I want to say you have it in the show notes themselves.
Well, I have the first article. Here we go. Damon Lindelof and Carol Marcus. Damon Lindelof on women in Star Trek Into Darkness. And, I don't know why, but my computer immediately stopped scrolling up or down, which is very disappointing because it's just it's a basic function of a computer. Go to a web page, scroll up and scroll down so that I may read the text. I have the page up. The page is loaded, but I can't do it. And I don't want to paraphrase his Twitter because it was so well done. He thought about it. He wanted to
so
put it
so constructed just right. It was a perfect house of cards.
Yes, I would. That would be the way I would word it. All right, so. Okay, so Damon Lindelof in an interview said, "Oh, I don't have it. Oh well, I have to paraphrase, and I hate myself for it."
Do you want me to read it?
Do you have it? His Twitter updates.
Oh,
yeah,
oh,
no, it's not
Twitter.
That. I've got that article,
no, okay.
But they don't have the Twitter. But okay, so this is going so well. So Damon Lindelof on Twitter says, "The scene came across differently than I intended it to when I wrote it. But I do take responsibility for the way it was done. That it was not. I don't believe it was done well, and I believe it was unnecessary in basically exposing an actress that way just for a sexist way." He acknowledged it, apologized for it, and even said it was his intention never to do something like that again in terms of trying to write a character, because he acknowledged the fact that it discredits who they're trying to portray as an intelligent female character when they suddenly reduce her to what is now commonly known as eye candy. You don't want your female characters to be eye candy. And guess what? In the year 2013, it is becoming less and less and less acceptable for a main female character to be eye candy. A la Hunger Games. Let's talk about there are so many strong female characters now where they don't have to, you know, take off all their clothes in mainstream movies. Video games still are this way. Video games are horrible, but we don't have time to go into all that now. But basically, so that's Damon Lindelof's reaction. Here's J.J. Abrams' reaction. J.J. Abrams' reaction basically said, whatever. I'm paraphrasing, but in an interview, he's like, he was in an interviewer who said, "What about the scene that people are talking about a lot?" And J.J. Abrams, again, paraphrasing, says in this interview, I believe it's with MTV, where he says, "Oh, yeah, there's a deep reason, but it's a secret and I couldn't tell you." And he was trying to be funny. Guess what? It's not funny at all. And so then he went on the Conan O'Brien show a day or two later. And on Conan, Conan O'Brien set up a question with him that was obviously scripted and pre-planned, where Conan says, "Hey man, what about the scene that everybody's talking about?" He's like, yeah, I realize it's in the underwear. And then they put a picture up and everyone in the audience hoops and hollers like, you know, 7-year-old boys. And it's funny, right? They do it in a humorous take. Of course, the scene in the movie's not humorous at all. It's kind of, as I said before, gratuitous. But in the context of the Conan O'Brien show, it's funny because it's like, oh, look at this essentially model. She's not a character in the film. She's a model. And so in that thing, he said, and there was this one scene where Benedict Cumberbatch was in a shower scene and they showed a clip from the film that was deleted that showed like a very ominous shot. Oh, by the way, I'm going to describe the scene fully. To equate it, to balance the board, they showed this ominous shot of a brooding, shoulders up, Benedict Cumberbatch under the shower. Now, but the way they showed it in the clip, in the context, because they had just shown Alice Eve in her underwear, they showed this clip to be funny, saying it was balancing, and in fact even did a bit afterwards where they put, instead of the hum, dum, dum, the ominous music, they put like a super sexy song as bed music and said, "Look at that, it's Benedict Cumberbatch, that's right, in the shower." And so here's the deal. So basically what you're saying is it's okay. And he even verbally said, J.J. Abrams in another interview said, "Well, it's okay because we show Kirk without his shirt in an earlier scene, so it's okay to have actress Alice Eve in her underwear." And here's the problem. Because you're showing because of the way you're portraying it, you're saying that Kirk, it's okay for Kirk. But that's a miserable excuse. And we know what? J.J. Abrams knows it. Because in the scene, Kirk, like the manly man of the 21st century that owns everything, is sleeping with three alien women in the scene. So it's like, it's not compromising Kirk as a character. And you don't have like a long, you know, legs up shot. And there's a technical term. I did research for this piece, by the way. Wikipedia calls it the male eye. And it's something that's been around since the 60s since the 50s and 60s, where it's the camera comes from the perspective of a male. So it's basically the camera is looking up the actress, where that does not happen with her. So it's, the comparison is terrible to begin with the Kirk. Well, and then, all right, I'm almost done.
I'm not sure that you made the difference entirely clear.
Okay.
But basically what I'm hearing you say is the difference is, one is basically we're showing how Kirk is all awesome and hot by doing this, and how in the other scene, Carol Marcus is more just simply eye candy, and she can't even get Kirk to not look at her when she asks.
It's a strong way to put it, but I would say the victim of Kirk's promiscuous gaze, to use fancy words. And I think that's a very good way to put it.
Why did she have to take off her clothes in that scene?
I can't remember why
she had to do it.
I know from a story writer's perspective why they did it. Hello. All right, just one second. You bring up a good point. We'll jump into that in just a second. So the final thing is, and then the other comparison that they tried to excuse it. So first they tried to excuse it by saying, well, we did it to Kirk too, which they didn't. And then they tried to excuse it by saying, well, we did it to Benedict Cumberbatch too, which the context is not the same. And for the love of Pete, they deleted the scene from the movie. So you lose the opportunity to do that. So there you go. Be a man. J.J. Abrams, be a man. Man up. Say it was not a good way to portray the actress. And like Damon Lindelof, own the fact that it was not in the best taste. Does it ruin the movie? No. I loved the movie. It's a fantastic film. It gives me so much excitement and hope for Star Wars moving forward. But I swear to the Force, in the name of all that's holy, if we get a leg to top shot of any female character in the next Star Wars movie, I'm revolting. Because this can't happen. Because you know what? Star Wars has never been guilty of that. Princess Leia is a uniquely strong female character, especially for her time. And that's what I think Return of the Jedi is egregiously at fault in. A New Hope does not do it. Return of the Jedi is egregiously at fault.
You're never going to see it in Star Wars because Lucas went back and made it so Han doesn't shoot first. They got rid of your pig. Kirk is a pig. Kirk has always been a sexist pig. I mean, that's why it was written. I mean, okay, originally, Carol Marcus has Kirk's kid. She has his son. They did a little something. I mean, obviously, that's where they're going there. They got to get a reason for Kirk to even be interested in this chick. And Kirk has always been driven by his libido, hence why they gave you the I'm sleeping with three alien chicks scene. I mean, I didn't see that as taking out of the movie, more as the lens flares. There were so many lens flares, and I don't want to talk about lens flares in a negative way because I didn't mind them, but there were a couple moments where I was like, okay, that's a lot of flaring, and that took me out of it. But the scene with the over-sexualized, I didn't even catch it. I just assumed it was to give the relationship, or why Kirk in the next movie, I'm assuming, is going to want to have a relationship. I didn't see it as taking away from her intelligence because she was the only one on the ship capable and had the knowledge of those torpedoes. So she was already smart, equal to Spock, because Spock got all irritated on the fact that, hey, why do you have someone here who's me? What the heck? What the heck, Kirk? What the heck? I thought that worked, but I get back to that, and I'm genuinely asking because I can't remember. I only watched it once in IMAX, but why did she strip? Was there a reason? Was she getting into a gear to get into something? I can't remember why she did that.
Yeah, the excuse for the scene was, and it was an excuse, by the way, but the excuse for the scene was that she had to get into some sort of jumpsuit and I don't even remember the plot at the point of the film, but yeah, that was the excuse for the scene. And you're right, Mark, it is brief, and it's a small detractor. It's not overt. It's not like every single female in the character, all they're doing throughout the whole movie is swooning and dressing around in bikini. But I do think, and even Uhura, I thought, like was always putting her hand to her mouth in horrified terror that something bad was going to happen to Spock. It got to the point where like, okay, come on. There weren't strong enough female characters.
But was that before or after she chewed Spock out and gave him her reason, though? Because, see, I saw all those as very subtle nuances to somebody that knew not just Star Trek, but the original universe, and kept it as close as it could. Because I heard a lot of people complaining about utilizing too much of the original Star Trek 2, but you didn't see the down-the-throat mind aliens that you saw in the first one, in the second one. They did that in the other one. Well, like Nathan had mentioned the fact that the main villain in this one is English and not... And I don't even know where he was from originally, but I didn't see that as a major issue. But I do know that I have other friends that for them that was a deal breaker, and I'm just like, really? That's going to be your deal breaker?
Well, and I guess one of the things here too is, Mark, you seem to be looking at it more from a in-universe perspective.
Yeah,
always.
I like that always. Yes,
always.
It's true.
And
well. Yeah, and as I tend to do it, I tend to jump on these things from an
and outer. Riley's looking at it more from a storytelling and producer type viewpoint. But and in that way, I would agree with both of you because, I mean, Kirk kind of takes a couple steps back at the beginning of the movie. You know, he went through total reckless, doesn't care about anything or anyone to... the end of the first Star Trek movie to being a much more mature individual. And you can see that that's not entirely the case in the beginning of this film. I mean, let's just toss out the prime directive and risk everyone's lives. But everybody, very few people will make a change fully all at one time. And so to me, it's realistic that Kirk occasionally slides back into that old Kirk. And I mean, that is a part of Kirk's character. So it would be odd to me if they completely removed every aspect of the old Kirk, especially this early into the franchise. But there are other ways to show that.
Well, one of the things that I was telling Riley in the last episode in the after show was when my mom thinks about Trek, one of the things that always comes to her mind is the interracial kiss between Kirk and Uhura.
Yeah, groundbreaking.
It was the first ever. And how at that time, you know, my mom likened it to you know, almost sex on TV. Because at that time, when you had parents in the bedroom, their beds were separated. They weren't together.
Think of the Dick
All
Van
that
Dyke
was a
show?
Total different time. And
that,
you know, we look at it like, oh, it was a kiss. But it wasn't just a kiss back then. That was big. Whoa, can you believe what they did? And, you know, and I agree with Riley in the aspect of they do need to step back on how sexualized they do make everything. But we do live in a day and age where you go to someplace like Florida and you're going to see some pretty revealing bathing suits on the beach. Some that I would say I would never let my daughter wear. But it is the sign of the times. And granted, I don't like the direction, but I could see how those scenes are, in a sense, that kiss just blown up to the times we live in. And so, you know, I try not to, when I watch these type of films, I did not want to be spoiled going into it. So I avoided as much stuff as possible. So when I come out of it and people were like, man, I hate it. And I was like, what did you hate? And those were the things that I was hearing. I'm like, really? Like in the first movie, like I understood most of everybody that I knew's reason to not like the films. I was like, okay, I can understand where you're coming from with that. It took me a while to swallow the alternate universe pill as well. But hey, it's Trek. It's not that far-fetched. But I don't know. To me, I just felt like there were so many really cool themes that worked that I don't know. I had my blinders on, I guess. Like, it didn't seem that major. I mean, granted, it was enough to make me stop and go, okay, why exactly was she taking off her uniform right then and there? But when that scene happened in Kirk peeking, I totally saw that as, well, that's the love interest right there. They got to give him a reason to look at her as more than just, you know, okay, well, she's smart. Kirk was never after women for their brains. That's Picard. That was never Kirk. I mean, and that's from a longtime Trek fan. I mean, when you like Trek for as long as I do, you have your favorite captains. I mean, mine is, it will always be Sisko. Why? Because Sisko punched Q right in the face. took no BS.
Really?
You know, then I like Kirk because Kirk is he's a scoundrel. He's a rapscallion, you know. Picard, he's got the noble do it right. And then you've got Captain Janeway, who is the don't mess with this lady. She will tear you a new one. Classic mama bear. Everybody's got your favorite captain.
Yeah. Well said, Mark. And I think I do want to keep it in perspective in that it's not the end of the world or anything. But I think these are the kind of issues when you talk about the portrayal of women that I think are important to Star Wars. And Star Wars has been guilty of this before. A New Hope was great. But as far as characters like Princess Leia or even Padme in some cases go, there are times where I think the way they were portrayed in the films damaged them as intelligent, free-thinking women. Especially in Return of the Jedi in the beginning 40 minutes. But again, that's a topic for another time. We got to do a commentary. We didn't get to do a commentary because we had to postpone it, unfortunately. But we hopefully will put that together soon. Mark, you said this well. On the topic of spoilers, I did not really seek any, but they did a great job of keeping the plot away from the trailers and everything. So I was surprised. I loved seeing Star Trek knowing so little about the film, literally just what was in the trailers. And as much as I enjoyed that film, it's really convincing me to stay as spoiler-free as reasonably possible. Which, yes, that's a large caveat. But as spoiler-free as reasonably possible for Star Wars Episode 7. I don't want to dig into the script if it comes out or anything like that. I do want to just stay the trailers, the news, but I think that'll be it for me.
If they put out a book, I may read the book beforehand because, like Nathan said, Episode 3 was a much, much better watch knowing what I knew in the behind-the-scene aspect. But it's a gamble, man.
Yes, it is. All right, that does it for the super awesome bonus stuff at the end of the credits. Thank you guys who stayed for the Star Trek spoiler discussion, and thank you guys for listening and for sending in those voicemails, all that good stuff. We'll be with you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
So awesome to hear Pine do the
boldly. You know what? I would be entirely okay with it if Giacchino did this next Star Trek, Star Wars score. That would be awesome. All right, that does it. So long, folks.